Welcome to Fanboy News Network, your guide to geek culture. I'm Jeff Harris.
And I'm Daniel Christensen.
And this is our first episode of 2016.
Indeed.
So it's going to be our 2015 year in review.
Well, actually, before we get into the year review, I just have to have one commentary on 2016 so far.
Sure.
I was getting ready to come over here this evening, and I was scrolling through my Facebook account, and I see Tom Baker's image pop up. And my heart drops to my stomach, and I'm like, dear God, do not take another one of my heroes away from... It's his birthday today.
Yeah.
So, happy birthday, Tom Baker.
Yeah.
And don't die anytime soon, please.
Yeah. So, originally we wanted to have Jillian Venters with us.
Yes.
But we actually were going to record last week, and both Jillian and I got sick.
Yes.
So, we went for this week, and tonight Jillian has a migraine.
And at this point, I'm just going to be like Skyping in from now on. I'm sitting over here.
So I think it just, you know, we didn't want to put it off any longer. So here we are. And yeah, I mean, before we get into the year in review, we have lost a lot of really prominent people in this month's short span of time.
Indeed.
I mean, one of the things I was going to discuss with Jill, were she here, was the loss of David Bowie.
Oh, yes.
I think that's just... I mean, obviously a lot of them were prominent to geek culture, but Bowie, the best description I heard of David Bowie was the patron saint of the outsider.
Yes. He made it okay.
Yeah. Anyone who was weird outside the mainstream, he was like, you can be something amazing. Just be yourself.
And you can do that and listen to David Bowie because he was able to do all this. And he didn't even have David Bowie to listen to besides him talking to himself in his own head.
Yeah.
So if he can do it, you can do it.
Yeah. So obviously R.I.P. David and Alan Rickman. And
oh my, yes.
Lemmy and Glenn Frey. Yeah, the year needs to slow down.
I have to say one extra thing about Alan Rickman. He's always been someone that I've had an affinity with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I remember back to not just Die Hard, not just Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which he stole.
Well, he was the only reason it's watchable.
Exactly. But then even obscure stuff like Truly Madly Deeply, which everyone refers to as a thinking man's ghost. They came about around approximately the same time, dealt with the same sort of issue, but in a completely and utterly British manner.
Sure. And I also remember him, the first thing I remember seeing him in post Die Hard was a movie, January Man.
Oh, yes.
With Kevin Kline. Time I saw him not play a bad guy.
Yep. One of the few.
And yeah, obviously we could lose an entire episode doing the RIPs.
Of course.
But... we want to talk about the year that was.
Yes.
So, 2015, for geek culture, it was an absolutely amazing year.
Oh my, yes. No matter what metric you want to use.
And so, obviously, the movies, I think, is the place to start because just the amount of great geek cinema we got in 2015 and... The argument, and at this point it's just an argument, is what was the best film of the year? And the problem is, up until mid-December, hands down, Mad Max Fury Road had it.
Of course.
You know, hands down. But then Star Wars, The Force Awakens comes out, and there starts being a question. Now, I think that overall, cinematically... Fury Road was the better picture. And I say that in the Star Wars The Force Awakens was a great film, a great continuation of the trilogy. I loved it dearly. But 10 years from now, film students will not be studying Star Wars The Force Awakens.
No.
10 years from now, film students will be studying Fury Road.
Yes.
So I
agree wholeheartedly. If nothing else, and I mean... The Oscars have come out and paused to point out, wow, there was a lot of white people in that.
Yeah.
And personal opinion, I think that if there is any justice in the world, the film editing Oscar will go to, and I can't even remember the woman's name.
It's George Miller's wife.
Yeah. Who took 480 hours worth of film. Let's just say that again. 480 hours worth of film and turn it into a 2-hour movie that you can't look away from.
Yeah. And I mean, Miller basically knew she was his secret weapon.
Yes.
He said that constantly.
Yes.
That he couldn't have done it without knowing she was going to be in the editing booth making that. And the camera composition and the fact that Miller fought with the director of photography.
Oh, yeah.
And the director of photography was essentially on board with the plan, but was fighting everything he ever knew to do the center focus and not the golden ratio, and to avoid the male gaze versus the just focus on the action.
Yeah.
These are the things that make Fury Road groundbreaking.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that the Academy is acknowledging it enough to give it the Best Picture nomination. I don't expect it to win Best Picture.
Oh, no.
I think that's just asking too much of the Academy. But honestly, if it does, like you said, if it doesn't win editing, then there's a crime.
Yes.
Because its editing was amazing.
I did suddenly realize halfway through this discussion that, there is another similarity between Fury Road and The Force Awakens. Is that, depending on how you want to look at it, they're both the fourth movie in their franchise.
This is
me,
true.
This is me with a big, stupid grin on my face.
That is true. Well,
the fourth movie that everyone will admit is in the franchise. That's how true. About that?
Well, here's... somebody pointed out that Force Awakens is the first Star Wars movie where its episode number matches its release number.
True. And frankly, this is the first, it's the first time that I have said, I'm looking forward to the next Star Wars movie since 1980.
Yeah. Well, here's something. So we were just extolling the virtues of the woman we sadly did not have the forethought to do the research to get her name right, which she,
I've been
richly deserves.
I've been listening to enough Chris Hardwick. I know that he has somebody on staff that all they do is Google stuff so he doesn't sound like an idiot.
Right.
You're going to talk for a minute.
Right.
I will look up.
But while Daniel is looking up her name so we give her proper credit, one thing that was pointed out in a great article I read recently was everyone asks, what is it that was the difference between the original trilogy and the prequels that caused such a great difference? And the answer is, apparently, George Lucas's ex-wife.
There is that. Margaret Sixel. Thank you, Margaret. Thank you for doing the wonderful and incredible things that you did.
And we got it in here, so Margaret is getting her full credit.
Yes.
But yeah, apparently, well... look, you should look up George Lucas's
first wife
because she was the editor on the first Star Wars films.
True.
And so a very similar thing, but she was the person who could look at George and say no. That what people have said is there were actually a lot of bad plans for the original Star Wars films.
Well, yes.
That she stopped, and that what happened with the prequels is she was out of the picture by that point, and no one else had the ability to tell George no.
Marcia Lucas.
Marcia Lucas. So she was the unsung hero. And the difference is, George never really credited Marcia, whereas...
And you'll notice they split in 1983, which, you know...
Yeah. But George Miller credits Margaret.
Yes.
So I think that's a difference right there. And with the new film, since we're now... segueing into talking about Star Wars, you can go over a lot of things about why it worked. I mean, I listened to our anticipations. We were close on some things, way off on others.
Of course.
I think what that shows is the trailers did an amazing job of getting our butts in the seats without spoiling the film.
Yep.
But I think that now this... 3 weeks into January, in this podcast, we can safely talk about the spoilery things that made Force Awakens works.
You can. I ain't going there. Not well, teasing.
So, well, and again, I think that what a lot of people pointed out was some of this is just Abrams' touch.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, as much as people want to credit Abrams, I want to credit Kathleen Kennedy.
Okay, yes.
So for people who aren't aware, the producer in charge of Star Wars, and I mean that in the broad sense. Disney has hired her to be in charge of Star Wars. And her name is Kathleen Kennedy. You've probably heard the name before. She used to be Steven Spielberg's assistant. And he trusted her enough to make her a producer in his company. The first movie she ever produced was a little film. It was meant to be a little film.
Itty bitty little thing.
Little thing called E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Oh, that.
And everything from E.T. on that Spielberg did, Kathleen Kennedy was the producer on.
Yep.
And she, I mean, if you look at her credits in IMDb, you see a list of movies people love over the years. She was the producer on the Indiana Jones films. She was the producer on The Goonies, which she says is the film more people talk to her about than anything else.
Because everybody squeeze over that.
Yeah, she was the producer of the Gremlins films. She was the producer of Empire of the Sun.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just have to back up for a quick second. For the Goonies things, mm-hmm. people squeeing about that.
Yeah.
I was at Rose City Comic Con last fall,
mm-hmm.
and they had Sean Astin. Everyone knows these days as Frodo Baggins.
Samwise,
pardon me. God, take away my geek card. Yeah. Everyone knows as Samwise Gamgee. And what did they have him there for? Goonies.
Well, I think that's true of anyone that was really involved in the production. Yeah. It's a movie that touched a lot of people. And she has said in interviews she's glad it was a one and done.
Oh, yes.
That they didn't go back and revisit, that they let it stand alone because it stands as this pristine thing because it has not been mucked with.
Yeah.
So the point is, Disney, in their infinite wisdom, decided that Kathleen Kennedy should be the person in charge of Star Wars. And yeah, as much as we can credit Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan for their great work and all the casting, it's her setting the tone of what made the original trilogy beloved. And yes, we have easily one of the most diverse casts you could ask for in a film. I mean, this movie blows up the idea that you need a white male lead protagonist
mm-hmm.
for the movie to be a success, because you have the central character being Rey
mm-hmm.
and, you know, Finn and Poe being, you know, making up our heroic trio.
You've got a kick-ass heroine and an interracial gay couple. I mean, what more could you ask?
There is sort of the ship writes itself. Well, it doesn't hurt that Oscar Isaac has admitted he was playing a bit of romance in those scenes. He knew what he was doing.
And why not? And the
but it does get back to the point of, you know, a lot of those elements, and it did put together a good cast. And
mm-hmm.
A lot of people complain, oh, it's just New Hope redone. It's like, that's a really weak sauce argument. It's touching on the monomyth again, which has always been Star Wars.
True. It is playing, giving homage to Joseph Campbell yet again. And, I mean, yes, there are a lot of similarities, because if you stand far enough back, there's a lot of similarities between any kind of movie.
Well, sure.
And frankly, it was a way to, I mean, the whole idea of there being 9 freaking movies, soon to be 12 freaking movies in this pantheon, is just the idea that, well, to borrow from another pantheon, all of this has happened before and all of this will happen again.
The one thing I really liked is for the people from the trailer saying, oh, Kylo Ren's just a retread of Darth Vader.
Oh, no.
You know, he's a fanboy of Darth Vader, and that's in the script.
Yes.
And so at that point, everything he does makes sense from the, he's trying to emulate his image of Darth Vader.
Well, I mean, he is the ultimate fanboy, because as somebody pointed out today, Kylo Ren's name subscribes to the Star Wars name.
I saw that
meme.
That Kylo is.
If you take Skywalker, the KY from Skywalker, the LO from Solo, it's like, why not?
So yeah, the point being that it was good enough to jumpstart the excitement.
Yes.
Again, and there has been a lot of talk about the one thing I've seen a lot of people saying is those of us who grew up with Star Wars, think about the children now.
Oh, yeah.
Or this is what they get to grow up with. My goddaughter is absolutely enraptured with Star Wars now.
Of course.
Absolutely enraptured with it. And you hear stories a lot of, you know, kids in the theaters, the moment they realize that guy in the mask is actually a girl in the first scenes in the scavenger mask is actually a girl.
Uh-huh.
And get excited, and that, you know, no one ever rescued Rey.
Yeah.
You know,
she did a phenomenal job of rescuing her own ass.
Yeah.
Thank you very
much. So there's so much to like, and was it perfect? No, there were flaws.
Of course.
But it stands as a great way to get the franchise jump started. But in the end, again, I think overall, if we want to talk about cinematic excellence, Fury Road. But they both have similar themes. They blow apart the white male.
Literally.
They blow apart the idea that you need a white male protagonist to lead the movie. That, in fact, movies that have inclusion and diversity can be great successes. And hopefully Hollywood's going to start taking that lesson, especially right now, because the biggest controversy surrounding Star Wars is the amazing lack of Rey merchandise when she was the main character.
Oh, yeah, by the way, never mind the fact that she got paid approximately $300,000 for her role. And Mark Hamill, bless his one-handed soul, got $1 million for 30 seconds of screen time.
And again, I look at that as, yes.
They needed it to pass the torch. I totally get that. He's a far more established actor. I get that. She's the lead of the movie.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I don't want to, for a real comparison, I don't want to see what she made versus Ford or Hamill. Yeah. What did she make versus Isaacs and Boyega?
Excellent question.
Because that's it. You've got the, Isaacs is the more established of the trio.
Mm-hmm.
He actually had a great movie out this year called Ex Machina.
Oh, yeah. Ex Machina is incredible.
Ex Machina. Right. I don't know why I do that.
It looks like.
Yeah. You have, he's going to be the main villain in X-Men Apocalypse coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at his array of work. John Boyega had stuff, but his biggest role to date was Attack the Block, which was a criminally underseen film.
Which is getting a lot more eyes on it now, though.
Sci-Fi Channel is promoting the heck out of it because, wow, we can now promote Star Wars John Boyega and get eyes on the screen. And, oh, by the way, it happens to be a really good film.
Yeah.
So, but that's the comparison I want to see.
Sure.
Anything else in film this year? I have a couple of things I want to touch on, but I'm going to give you the baton for a minute.
Oh, by the way, anything as far as 2015 and years in film, I mean, I find it highly amusing that a movie that made over $1 billion is ranking third in our list so far. Okay, Jurassic World, it was good, it was wonderful. I mean, it was a popcorn movie in so many different ways. It was lovely to see it and to kind of pick it apart as far as some of the things that it said and some of the things that it didn't say.
Right.
But it did play into the whole standard idea of white dude saves the day. It plays into the whole idea of science run amok is the problem in the world, you know, which frankly goes all the way back to the heart of science fiction, which is Frankenstein.
Sure. Two things I want to touch on with Jurassic World.
Okay.
So I heard an interview with Kathleen Kennedy. It was about Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
But she was talking about, you know, she was the producer on Jurassic Park.
Mm.
And she told a great story about the collaborative nature of filmmaking. In the original script of Jurassic Park, the Tyrannosaurus...
Hold up. Park or world?
Park.
Okay.
In the original script of Jurassic Park, the Tyrannosaurus died in the second act. And looking at how the film was coming together, Spielberg realized... No, the Tyrannosaurus is the hero of the film.
Yeah.
I can't kill her. And he got Kennedy and the DP and the production designer together, and they on set rewrote the script. Which ends with us getting that great triumphant moment of the T-Rex roaring in that final shot with the banner coming down.
Yeah,
because on set, somebody realized and they changed course and made a better film.
Yes.
The other thing I got from Jurassic World is that I was listening to an interview with Ron Howard. Mm-hmm. Given all these interviews I'm talking about, I heard on The Nerdist, because if you haven't noticed, we like The Nerdist because he's the best celebrity interviewer going, in my opinion. He was interviewing Ron Howard, and he asked Ron Howard, is there anyone he would like to work with that he hasn't worked with yet? And Ron said that his daughter, Bryce Dallas Howard, had such a good working experience with Chris Pratt that Howard would now like to work with Pratt just because the stories his daughter told him about working with him.
That could be awesome.
So, but other than that, yeah, Jurassic World is a fairly standard blockbuster.
There's that. There is the Marvel Cinematic Universe had their weigh-ins with Ant-Man and
Age of Ultron.
Oh, that little thing. You know, and that's the thing is, I mean, everything, it just seems like it's like looking at a candle next to a spotlight, because you've got this thing that Star Wars that's been beating you in the head for 6 months / 20 years.
Yeah.
/ 40 years. And everything else kind of pales in comparison. I'm actually kicking myself simply that I didn't do a little more research in it. But yeah. Ultron has been incredible. The television has been incredible, because right. This is the year we got Daredevil and we got Jessica Jones and we got Flash and Supergirl and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Peggy Carter
And I want to talk about TV
in a bit. Yeah, I'm sorry.
But Age of Ultron was... I liked it. It wasn't as good as the first Avengers.
Yeah.
I honestly feel they should have done, maybe split it into two movies as well. I think they...
That's getting old.
Getting old, but they condensed so much plot into the movie. That was my biggest complaint.
Sit people down for 4 friggin' hours in a movie theater rather than splitting it in between two movies. I'm tired of it.
Put an intermission?
Yeah. Let's all go to the lobby. I mean, something. I mean...
Ant-Man, I enjoyed.
Yeah.
I think part of why I enjoyed Ant-Man was... Everyone expects all Marvel movies to be amazing blockbusters,
mm-hmm.
and it was a successful film.
Oh yeah,
it wasn't as successful as some of the previous films, but it didn't have to be.
Yeah.
So I think for what it was setting out to do, its biggest problem was it suffered. And again, it's the diversity issue. They set up the female lead as somebody who clearly should have been the hero of the film, and then gave a weak sauce reason why she wasn't the one doing the mission.
How about that?
Fortunately, the sequel is going to be called Ant-Man and the Wasp, and they're apparently going to make up for that fact.
Here's hoping.
Obviously been a great year for Disney.
Oh.
I mean, Disney...
When hasn't it been a good year for Disney?
Well, yeah, but this year, I mean, Force Awakens is going to quickly prove that the $4 billion they paid for Lucasfilm was a good investment.
They've already made 2 of it back.
And... they've got the Avengers, I mean, the Marvel films.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to quickly talk about, I'm not going to dwell too much on this because if people really want to hear about this, they can go back and listen to the episode I did recently of Don't Read the Latin, where we went over the horror films of the year.
Of course.
And but since we're doing our overall geek film and review, I just want to recap what the best horror films were. And my problem was I didn't have one when we went down the list. I think we kind of all agreed... it was hard. Jen had a definitive top 10 list, but I mean, this was the year we got the best theatrical outright horror film. And by theatrical, I mean, got a theatrical release was It Follows, which could be, you know, the really simple, doesn't give it enough credit, is the sexually transmitted ghost. It is, but it's a much better film than that. It's a really good.
Probably
better to say the sexual. It's a curse that gets passed on by somebody you sleep with, and whatever the thing is that's coming for you. Crimson Peak.
Oh yes,
was a very good film. Although again, our feeling, and this again, Jill, if she was here, she'd be going on about. But Crimson Peak was very much a gothic romance. It got marketed as a horror film because. It's the closest bucket it hit.
Well, and the Yeah, what was I thinking? The thing of it is that if you say someone tell someone it's a gothic romance, a average dude on the street that's more concerned about the Seahawks, he's going to think it means Jane Austen and Pride and Prejudice. Now, Pride and Prejudice and zombies is going to be awesome.
I'm sure there's going to be an outing for that one. The other one we really talked a lot about is, and I've talked about it here before, Final Girls.
Yes.
Which was just a great homage to slasher films. But we've talked about that in previous episodes, so I don't feel the need necessarily to go on about it. The other one we talked about a lot in Don't Read the Latin was a really great indie horror film that came out this year called Late Phases, which is about a werewolf attacking a retirement community.
Interesting.
And yeah, because it got a lot of older actors, and instead of being a youth-orientated film, it was dealing with people who are older. It had a lot of great actors who... I mean, I can't think of his name, but he was the star of The Last Starfighter is in it. Ginger from Gilligan's Island was in it.
Oh, wow.
The female lead from Saturday Night Fever was in it. A lot of actors and actresses who had done things where you don't see them as much anymore because they've gotten older, which is the greatest sin in Hollywood.
How dare they? Sorry, actually, something that just reminded me of, thinking about the whole idea of setting through retirement community reminds me of Bubba Ho-Tep, which was a great show.
It's probably one of the better comparisons to Late Phases. Late Phases is Bubba Ho-Tep without as much humor.
Ugh.
Well, without as much humor. There's still humor in it.
Okay, good.
It's just, it's less, I would almost classify Bubba Ho-Tep as a horror comedy.
Yeah.
Whereas Late Phases is a horror film, but just to give you part of the setup, the werewolf attacks the first night this one guy's in the community. It's a film, and he very quickly figures out it's a werewolf. And he doesn't tell anyone this because they know they'll think he's crazy. So he spends the next month basically prepping for the next full moon and trying to figure out who the werewolf is. So first off, the movie assumes its protagonist is smart, lets him act smart, and thereby assumes the audience is also smart.
Yes.
The only downside about Late Phases is the design of the werewolf costumes is kind of poor.
Well,
that's my only complaint.
Yeah. I have to say, as someone who does not normally watch horror movies very much, mm-hmm. I found myself, while you were talking about the ones that you saw, going through and looking at the one or two that I have managed to watch in the last year and realizing that they are actually not movies that came out this last year. What We Do in the Shadows.
Right.
Which is hilarious. And Only Lovers Left Alive, which was 2013.
Right. And when we were doing last year's or a previous wrap up, there was that argument, could you consider Only Lovers Left Alive a horror movie? But that...
This is me cocking my eyebrows.
Just because it's got vampires, it's a discussion. You know what? Go back and find the previous episodes of Don't Read the Latin for
that
one.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And by the way, happy birthday upcoming to Miss Lovely, whose birthday is tomorrow?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. We'll have happened by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah, well, happy belated birthday.
And this episode most likely will come out either on or the day after my birthday.
I was getting that one.
Well, you know.
I was going to get to that one. Yeah. I was going to be like nice and stuff. But if you're going to be like...
About my birthday?
No, yes. No. Yeah, well.
Anyway.
I would have been better if I had my sister to gang up on you and do it. But, you know.
Yeah, well.
Suffer, I know.
Suffer, yeah.
Moving on.
So, anything else on film before we move on?
If we're getting into TV, I know two things about it, and Jack is one of them, and the other one I can't say on your TV show or on your show. So
yeah, well, TV is where I want to talk about now.
Go for it.
So this, like you said earlier, the Netflix series. Netflix has had a lot of success with Marvel.
Oh my, yes.
And, I mean, so far they've put out, in 2015, they put out two series, Daredevil and Jessica Jones. Both were massive hits.
Oh yeah.
Getting critical acclaim and getting some of the best viewership Netflix has had.
Yep.
Simple thing is Netflix knows they've got a success and they're working with Marvel to see what else they can do. Luke Cage is filming as we speak.
Yep.
They are casting Iron Fist and they are considering a Punisher series.
Actually, the news that I saw today is that they just announced another new Netflix series, which is sci-fi based. Altered Carbon.
I've heard a little bit about it.
I'm intrigued because I've read the Takeshi Kovacs series, and between Altered Carbon, Jessica Jones, Daredevil, whoever makes synthetic blood or fake blood for Netflix movies is going to be a millionaire.
But I think what the last year has shown and what the future showing Netflix, the other networks are beginning to take Netflix seriously.
Yes.
They're beginning to realize, apparently NBC not long ago hired somebody, and this was considered controversial, to Netflix doesn't really release their ratings. And NBC desperately wanted to know. So they did some kind of sniffer algorithm to figure out essentially Netflix ratings.
Mm-hmm.
But as somebody pointed out, it doesn't matter. Netflix is a subscription base. It puts out great shows because that convinces people, oh, I want to see this show. I should probably subscribe to Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully we're going to see, and I think we are going to see, more. Netflix has had its misfires.
Of course.
I actually haven't watched the third season of Hemlock Grove yet.
Yeah.
Their horror series. I'll get around to it, but
But House of Cards, Sense8.
Oh yeah,
I mean, there's incredible stuff.
There's another one,
Sense8. Oh yeah,
yeah. Sense8 was and another. Hey, let's talk about a diverse cast.
Oh, understatement.
I one thing I like about Sense8, they had a transgendered character played by a transgendered actress.
What a phenomenon.
Yeah.
What a phenomenon.
Plus, it gave Daryl Hannah work again that was...
Who is not the transgender actress.
She's not the transgender actress, but it gave her something good to work with, which was like just nice seeing her get... Again, that biggest sin in Hollywood is growing older.
Yeah.
What you need are places like Netflix where they don't care as much.
Oh, yeah. They're like, you? Come here. Sign here.
Yeah. As for... yet another season of Penny Dreadful. Well, second season of Penny Dreadful.
Which is amazing.
And, yeah, looking with anticipation to the third. Penny Dreadful is, again, it's that auteur vision.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have somebody who knows what he's doing. But, again, a great cast.
Oh, yes.
And and really good storytelling. And I cannot wait to see, especially, I know third season, they're introducing Dr. Jekyll.
Mm-hmm.
And... other than that, I cannot wait to see how they're pushing the plot lines forward. For regular television, this season, let's talk about what was new this season.
Okay.
And the big new geek show this season really was Supergirl.
Oh, yeah.
And Supergirl had kind of a strange start. It's, again, the same production team that does the CW superhero shows, but it's on... CBS.
Right.
And as much as they'd like to have crossovers, probably not going to happen.
No.
But the biggest complaint I heard was Supergirl, after it started and got better, that there's an assumption that the good writers from Arrow might have gotten, because that's the one thing that's coming is, and even I'll admit, I enjoy Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
I still watch it, but it's not been as good. And I think it's because the writing has been more focused on Supergirl and the Flash. And Arrow is the eldest of the shows. It's in its fourth season. Flash is in its second. Supergirl's in its first. And so it's already kind of having the, you know, we got to come up with something new. Whereas with Supergirl, they're very much like the Flash, embracing the comic book roots of the show. They're introducing a lot of the elements of the Superman mythos. There's some things that are Superman myth that they're just putting on Supergirl because they can get it on TV. They're going to be adapting a famous story written by Alan Moore for Superman, but it's going to be on Supergirl. They introduced the Martian Manhunter.
Oh, yes.
As a major supporting character on the show, which blew me away and talked about that last time.
Yep.
So it's doing great, and the two lead actresses are going to be guests this year at Emerald City Comic Con.
Of course.
Flash continues to be a great ride. Again, it's embracing its...
It's not a flash in the pan?
Not a flash in the pan. You had to go there.
Had to go there. That's what you keep me here for.
Yep. So, I had hopes at the beginning of the season that maybe Gotham would show signs of improvement. It was a fool's dream.
you can always have hope.
Yeah. And at Gotham, I still watch it, but it's very much the, I watch it for three things, three particular actors who do good jobs, and the rest of it I watch to see, well, what kind of train wreck is it going to be this week? Which is kind of how I watched Smallville.
Yeah, well.
And, yeah, it's just, but it's getting the ratings, so Fox will keep it on at least for a little while. The other one, now this was, I'm not really going to touch on this because it's not a 2015 thing, but like this week, Fox is introducing another DC-based show, Lucifer, based on the Neil Gaiman Lucifer comic.
Really?
Only they're not following any of the plot Gaiman had, so it's the loosest adaptation. Basically, Lucifer comes to Earth to punish the wicked and teams with a cop. So it's, she's a cop, he's the Lord of Hell. Together, they fight crime. let's just say I'm not going to be going out of my way to watch it.
Well, but the thing of it, I'm sorry. I mean, granted, doing what Neil Gaiman did with Lucifer, especially in the Sandman series, that would be a stretch for network television.
Oh, be a stretch for HBO.
It, true. At the same time, you know.
Yeah. So, I'm trying to think what else there was. I mean, we've talked mostly about the superhero shows.
Yeah.
And certainly not the only science fiction on television.
Oh, no. I mean... going,
but Sci-Fi Channel is doing some interesting stuff.
Yes.
Expanse, mm-hmm. Dark Matter. I don't know if you've seen either of those.
I haven't heard of... I've heard bits and pieces. The only one that I've heard of extensively has been The 100.
And that's an older show. I've never really watched it.
Well, but apparently it took its hard left turn into grimdark. And, you know, it's one of those things where, hey, guess what? Just because it has a bunch of teenagers doesn't mean that it's going to be light and fluffy.
Dark Matter, it's one of those Canadian-produced shows, much like Lost Girls.
Yeah.
But it basically takes the plot line of a specific episode of The Next Generation and builds a whole series around it. A crew on a ship wake up and can't remember who they are. They retain all of their skills and abilities, but all of their personal memories are gone.
Okay, then.
And so the early part of the series is trying to figure out who they are, what they're doing, and how do they get their memories back? Expanse, I think there's a lot going on in Expanse, but it's stars Thomas Jane from the Punisher film.
Okay.
One of the Punisher films.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it reminds me a lot of Outland. You know, cop in an outer...
Mm-hmm. Oh, the original Outland, like with Sean Connery and Saturn's Moons.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You're like the second person I know that actually remembers that movie.
Yeah, it's because it was a good movie.
Well, yes.
It was High Noon in space. But
yeah.
So those are good. But, so even though there's complaints about Sci-Fi Channel and they're cutting off good shows, they still are producing a lot of good stuff.
Huh.
So, I mean, Haven had its final season. I enjoyed it. I kind of liked the send-off they gave it. So, yeah.
Yeah. It is a good time to be a geek right now. Mm-hmm. 2015 has been a very good year as far as the amount, not just the amount of stuff, but the quality of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's it. I think that, one thing I think more and more, especially on television, is it's very much a writer's medium.
Yeah.
I think we saw that with Hannibal,
yeah,
which had its last season this year, which amazing, and I take it as a blessing we got three seasons. And some amazing work. And again, I cannot believe one of the big three networks put this show on. Because of how far they let them go.
You know, we are living in the future. To drive from my house to your house, I drove past three pot shops. We are living in the future.
Okay. Well, we're also living in the state of Washington.
Yeah, details.
I think before we get into this other thing I want to talk about,
yes.
I'm going to say that to last. I think it's worth looking back at the year that was in the convention circuit.
True.
And if we had one theme this year, sadly, it was convention committees acting badly.
Yeah. AKA, this is why we can't have nice things.
Yeah. And it almost always came down to diversity issues or harassment policies.
Yep.
And the way that the everything we looked at, from Saskatoon Blitz to MomoCon.
My personal favorite is still the one in New York that tried to hide behind harassment is only defined by the law, so unless someone's breaking the law, don't.
Right. Yeah, and a lot of it was just these could have all been solved with clearly defined harassment policies, because the shows that do have clearly defined harassment policies don't seem to have these problems.
The only problem that the cons with solid harassment policies are having is how to get all the money to their bank.
Yeah.
San Diego Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con, Emerald City Comic-Con, take your pick. These places are rolling in, and they've got rock-solid policies that say don't.
San Diego could be better.
Of course.
San Diego could be better, but overall, you're right. And, yeah, I mean, I know for a fact, because I talk to people, that Emerald City had one of its most successful years this year.
Oh, hell yes.
The vendors all talked about making money hand over fist.
Yes.
And everyone's hotly anticipating the four-day convention this year. But now, a couple of the standouts. I mean, there was the convention that kept screwing over the one artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kept giving her table away. And then jettisoned her.
Yeah, about now. Well, jettisoned her after she complained about
it. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was the, I can't even think of his name right now, Arthur Sudum, the zombie artist.
Right.
Who took over other artists' booth because he wanted to have a four booth, but only paid for one.
How about that?
And, you know, people complaining, hey, we paid for the convention having to find space for the artists that were getting displaced because apparently they didn't feel brave enough to tell the zombie artist he couldn't take over other people's booths. But he's now on a watch list, and by watch list, I mean Mark Waid is waiting for him in the tall grass. I think what we are seeing is that part of the reason these stories are gaining light is the issues are gaining light, and the fact that you do now have conventions that are doing it right makes the ones that are doing it wrong stand out even more.
Yeah. You can't say, oh, it's just the norm, when you have the cons setting a higher bar, saying we can be better than this. Saying that we, not just the con, but we as geeks and nerds and people who love this stuff can be better. And treat people with respect, no matter who they are, no matter what they believe, no matter what they're dressed like. No matter what bathroom they use, no matter what, people, we can be better than this.
Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I think the view of conventions and geek culture is positive. We're seeing acceptance becoming the norm.
Yes.
We are seeing the gatekeepers becoming the ones marginalized.
Yes.
Which is a good thing. It's telling them, no, anyone can come enjoy these spaces, and you pretty much have to live with it.
Yeah. You know what? I love Star Wars with a deep and abiding passion. I still sometimes have the word Star Trek come out of my mouth instead. I love Star Trek with a deep and abiding passion. I could no more tell you every single episode from the first season of Star Wars, or there I go,
yeah,
Star Trek, then flap my little wings and fly.
Yeah.
Does anyone question my credentials as a geek? Hell no!
Yeah, now, the thing I was saving for last, well, what I was saving for last, because you always have things you want to throw at me in the end.
Yes.
But let us turn our eye to the comic book industry.
Ooh, okay.
So first off, I just have a question, and I don't expect you to have the answer. I'm throwing it out to the world at large. Why is Greg Land still getting work?
That's an excellent question. Who's Greg Land?
So Greg Land... Greg Land is an artist for Marvel. He is most prominently known for series like, he did a lot of work on a series called Supreme Powers. He's doing some various Avengers work. He did Ultimate Fantastic Four for a while. Hang on a second. What I'm doing right now, because I was joking recently when I did the episode of Don't Read the Latin, that I brought a piece of art to show Jen, because that's what you want to do on a podcast, is
look at pictures.
Look at pictures, because the audience can't get it. But for those of you listening, what I'm doing is pulling up examples of Greg Land art so that Daniel can see it.
Oh, is he the one that did this? He did that one? Oh, uh-huh. If all you have to do is say he's the one that made turned Catwoman and Spider-Woman into Gumby.
No, that was a different artist.
Oh, okay.
No, who Greg Land is? Greg Land is infamous for doing what's known as trace art,
otherwise known as copying from other people.
Yeah, what Greg Land will do is he will take a picture.
Okay.
And he will then lightbox it.
Ah.
And trace it. And his favorite thing is he will do lightbox traces of porn for his super. So you tend to have weird open mouths on his figures that don't make any sense, or other weird faces that are obviously coming from,
crystal clear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Folks at home, you call that an O face.
An O face. Yeah. Yeah. And he is currently working at Marvel, doing a Avengers series of all things.
Of course.
And yeah, it's just this. So yeah, my big question is, why is Greg still getting work when, okay, his lines are very clean. If he was an original, and the thing is, he can do original art. He's done it before, but he's become very lazy. And the biggest problem is, since he keeps using the same porn over and over again, all his female characters have the same face.
How about that?
The biggest reason you can tell his She-Hulk from his Invisible Woman is that one of them is green.
Well, the other one's invisible.
So, yeah, that's my big... Now, outside of that, I think from the industry, the clear winner is Marvel.
Oh.
Hands down. I mean, just their market share alone is... And the fact that the comics industry this year actually saw a little expansion. New readers did come in.
Yes.
The thing is, they almost exclusively came into Marvel.
Because Marvel's the one selling the stuff that they want to see.
True. And it doesn't hurt that Marvel, like Lucasfilm, is owned by Disney.
Oh.
And as such, Marvel gets to do all of the Star Wars comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best... But the thing is, it's not that they're dashing out these books. They are having premier writers writing Star Wars, because these premier writers get to write Star Wars.
They get to write Star Wars. They get paid. They know that they'll sell and they'll get recognition for it. And frankly, I'm sorry, this is Disney. In the name of the mouse, the duck, and the holy dog, you will be entertained.
Yeah, that was a great... I like that. I'm going to remember that.
But I genuflected for those of you at home.
I would say the mouse, the duck, and Uncle Walt, but
yes.
That's me.
He is the Holy Ghost, after all.
Yeah.
So. The frozen head.
Oh. Yes, we... Yeah. You know, it's hard for Daniel and I to tell where a line for blasphemy is. Other people...
Blasphemy, blasphemy, you. I'm sorry.
So, the best of them, by the way, if you have not picked it up, and especially anyone out there with a Marvel Unlimited account, the first 7 issues of Darth Vader are available.
Interesting.
By Karen Gillan. He is a great artist. Jill knows him. They did a panel, None More Goth, this year.
Yes.
He was one of the contestants. He
won.
He won, by the way, which beating Kate Leth for, for goth points, that means he's really goth. But he writes the Darth Vader comic, and it's amazing.
Is it dark?
Issue 6 is one of the finest things ever. But yes, it's dark. Well, it's great because it also is written from a point of view. They do the scroll in the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
And the scroll is written as if we are, in fact, supposed to be rooting for the Empire.
Oh.
It's written in such a way that casts the Rebel Alliance as villains.
Of course.
So the series, even though it's still Darth Vader, it's taking a point of view which is still treating Darth as a protagonist. And issue 6 is great because issue 6, the Darth Vader comic takes place just after New Hope. So just after the Death Star blew up.
Okay.
And since Darth Vader is the only survivor, the Emperor is putting all of the shame of the destruction of the Death Star on him.
Okay.
So the whole point of the comic book is how did he re-get the Emperor's graces in time for Empire Strikes Back. Issue 6 is the issue where he learns the name of the pilot who blew up the Death Star.
I've seen bits and pieces of this. Where
he learns that the name of the pilot is Skywalker and very quickly puts two and two together. And it's great because the series, the artist, I can't remember the artist's name, but it's this great thing of there is, you know, Darth Vader's mask allows for no emotion.
Of course.
So they start having him have flashbacks. And what you have is the environment around Vader where windows start cracking and you realize...
Which on a spaceship is bad.
Yeah. And it's just... If I had to pick a comic in this year that I read that was just absolutely top-notch, I would absolutely tell people, go read Darth Vader.
Okay, then.
It's as good as you would hope a Darth Vader comic would be. And the other books that Marvel's been putting out, I mean, they've been doing some good stuff. They've been having the female Thor for a while.
Yes.
I don't think she is a 2015 thing anymore, but the book's been coming out. Marvel has, besides Star Wars, their great success is they have been figuring out how to create new characters that seem to have staying power, where it's not, oh, we're going to have Bruce Wayne stop being Batman and have a new Batman, or we're going to put a new character. We're going to just throw characters at the wall and see what sticks. Marvel seems to have a plan, which is let's create characters that are fully realized. And they also are very much embracing diversity in behind the scenes, but in their cast. We've talked that Miss Marvel, if you want to pick a character Marvel's created in the last couple of years that's going to be around 10 years from now, Miss Marvel.
Oh, hell yes.
But they also have Squirrel Girl, which is just a bizarre comic, but they've made work through its bizarreness. There's a character they came up with recently named America Chavez. And they do have her have some ties to Captain America, but more in a fanish sort of way, but not deep. I don't read a lot of those books. I've seen her in passing, but she's showing up enough that she's beginning to gain a fan base. The switch of Captain Marvel being Carol Danvers looks to be permanent now.
Good.
And yeah, Marvel has found a way to, with all of the other shenanigans, advance their universe.
Yes.
Their biggest problem this year was a scheduling mishap where their big crossover Secret Wars was delayed, and they decided not to hold back the rest of their comic book line waiting for it.
Uh-oh.
Well, because Secret Wars was supposed to be the launch of their new universe. The last two issues had delays, and Marvel wisely went, well, we can't not produce books.
Yeah.
So they've just had to play catch-up. But overall, it's worked because they have been introducing solid stories.
Yes.
And I think, again, it's the... Right now, all the ducks are in a row at Marvel. And part of that is, I think, honestly, if I had to do a comparison between what's happening at Marvel versus what's happening at DC, honestly, I think the answer comes down to Disney owns Marvel, Warner Brothers owns DC.
Yeah.
Marvel currently has 49% of the market share.
Yeah.
Versus 23% for DC Comics.
Yeah.
DC's Great Hope was Dark Knight Strikes Again, or Dark Knight The Master Race, which I read the issue of.
Mm-hmm.
I have it here, in fact, if you want it back.
Oh, no, I'm good.
Yeah, it's the problem with DC is they've had a policy of books aren't selling okay, put out another number one, and they seem to be slightly coming out of it, but they just...
They put out New 52, I mean...
Yeah, well, I think part of it is just they don't have as much of a cohesive vision at the top. And until they get that,
mm-hmm.
they're going to just be chasing Marvel.
Yep. Well, the thing of it is that, I mean, in so many ways, though, it is, frankly, number two has been the a better place to be in a lot of ways. I mean, aside from the whole, you know, dollars coming in thing, mm-hmm. I mean, you look at Coke and Pepsi, you look at Apple and Microsoft, you look at any of the grand dichotomies in life, mm-hmm. and the number two usually has a strong and devoted following, no matter what.
Yeah.
So, because, you know, Pepsi, Apple, you know, these things, they're not just followings, they're cult followings.
Yeah.
And that would actually be something interesting to explore someday as far as the Marvel fan versus the DC fans.
That's the kind of thing you have panels about at science fiction conventions.
True. Yeah.
So anything, we're kind of getting near the wrap up point. So, anything else you want to cover this time around? For the 2015, any last thoughts?
For 2015, 2015 is the year that I got my first, okay. Another thing about nobody challenges my geek cred.
Yeah.
2015 is the first year I ever opened a comic book box. As okay. far as going into the comic store and saying, hey, pull me comics.
Yeah.
I will buy them from you on a regular basis, guaranteed. Did that for the first time. So I'm reading again.
Yeah.
More than just here and there and everywhere. 2015 is the first year I started listening to podcasts. Ironic that I've been doing this for how many years with you here and with everywhere else, but this is the first year I started listening to them. So I have to give a shout out to Wolf359 and Black Tapes and all the things that make it fun to listen to. Although I have to respectfully disagree with Chris Hardwick because I'm getting sick and tired of he and his buddy laughing at their own jokes because they're nervous talking to famous people.
Okay, sure.
It's getting a little old.
All right, I can see that.
Beyond that, there's been some great books. There's been some great comics. And normally this is where I would take a moment to say, what are you reading? But I'm not going to do that because it is your birthday. And I want to say you have been doing this as a gift to everyone for years now. And you do it because you love it. And I realized a while back that the reason why the thing that I love to do is to help people do the things that they love. I've got a buddy that writes rock operas, and I show up and do one of those things every 2 years. You love to do podcasts, and I will show up and I will tell stupid stories into the ether from now until kingdom to come. But it's because of you and your love of doing this, and I wanted to say thank you, and I wanted to say happy birthday.
Well, thank you.
And for the sake of everyone, I am not going to sing. So.
Yeah, I think we... all right. Real quick, before as we wrap up, you mentioned podcasts.
Yes.
And yeah, Wolf359, next month we look forward to the new episodes.
Save Eiffel!
And Black Tapes podcast came back today.
Excellent.
I downloaded the first episode of season two.
I also been hearing good things about a Tannis.
Tannis is the spinoff.
Okay.
I haven't actually started listening to it. I listened to the first episode of Tannis. It basically, if you like Black Tapes, you're probably going to like Tannis.
Okay, then.
I also always like to give a shout out to EOS 10. They are another science fiction space station based podcast. And hopefully this time next year, we'll be talking about our podcast, which...
Oh, sorry.
You know, we will probably be announcing the name of soon.
Oh, sorry.
We just secured the URL. We're waiting for when we'll do the big announce.
Gotcha.
Yeah, until then, with that, thank you very much for those of you that listen to our podcast. And we will, now that we've got this out, we will return to our every 2 week schedule, or as close as we can manage.
Sounds good.
And if you want to drop us a line, go to www.fanboynewsnetwork.com, which I just renewed the URL or the account this week.
Good thing.
And leave us a comment, and we will talk to you all later.
Have a good one, everybody.
This program is produced by Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network, and is copyright 2016 to Jeff Harris and Fanboy News Network. All rights are reserved, including rights to copy and redistribute this program. All music in this podcast comes from The Footage Firm and is used under a royalty-free license.